Into the sun, into the sun, into the sun. Welcome to my dojo. This is Kung Fu Pizza Party, and I'm your host, Brandon Knight. And today I am here to fulfill one of my challenges as I sit down to review Into the Sun, starring Steven Seagal. Now, if you're dropping into the show for the very first time and you're wondering about this whole challenges thing, allow me to explain what goes on around here. You see, here on Kung Fu Pizza Party, I seek to deliver high-flying action in 30 minutes or less and serve up some wisdom one slice at a time. But there has been some instances where the show has gone over that 30-minute mark. And when that happens, I have to take on a challenge to restore my debt, to repay my debt and restore my honor. And one of my challenges was to watch any Steven Seagal movie, literally any of them, and record an episode about it. It is truly the most difficult challenge I have taken to date. And you may be wondering, Brandon, out of the 7,000 films Steven Seagal has made, why in the world would you choose Into the Sun from 2005? Well, you see, this actually wasn't my first through fifth pick at all. I was trying to find Under Siege. I wanted to watch Under Siege because, as many of us know, that is the pinnacle of Steven Seagal's career. That is the absolute height of his career. It is quite quickly all downhill after that point. But I even would have been happy with any of the first five, because although film quality-wise, Seagal's films take a dive after 1992, his first five films from 1988's Above the Law till Under Siege, and I think that was 92, it's early 90s, that late 80s to early 90s period when Seagal first came on the scene, he was putting out bangers. He was putting out box office smash hits. And let's keep that in mind, what year I just said, of 1988. Do you know what else came out in 1988? Rambo 3, Missing in Action 3, Bloodsport. I think Police Story 2, one of Jackie Chan, there was a big Jackie Chan movie that year. I can't remember offhand right now. Die Hard. Like, Steven Seagal debuts during this time period. Also, technically, Phantom Raiders came out in 1988 as well. And probably not fair to bring that movie into the mix of all the rest of these. But, like, those are some great action films, part of great franchises. And Seagal's right in there with him. Also, keep in mind, we're talking, like, late 80s, early 90s. He didn't have a big action film in 1988, but this is when Harrison Ford is putting out a lot of bangers as well. Working Girl came out in 88. Great Harrison Ford movie. Not really an action film, though. And then, of course, there's also, I'm sure Schwarzenegger had something going on during that time period as well. So in the midst of all of this, you got Steven Seagal entering the scene and making a ton of money in the box office. And those first five films are considered his best stuff in his career. And every actor does hit a point, especially within like the action genre of like maybe having a dud here and there, or, you know, even going through a little patch of just like not so great movies. Seagal never recovered, and there's a lot of reasons for that, and they're all merited because he's not a good person. So I was trying to find one of those. If I'm going to have to watch anything, I might as well watch one of the good ones, right? And that's when I discovered something very interesting. You can get virtually any of Steven Seagal's movies on free streaming, except for those five movies. And it's not even like, oh, you got to get a Netflix, Hulu, Max subscription to see those first five, like Above the Law or Under Siege. No, those movies are only available, at least at the recording of this episode, are only available on Apple TV Plus or Prime for buy or rent. Anything else, you can get on Tubi for free. And it makes sense that the majority of his movies are very easily accessible because a lot of them, especially post-2002, were direct-to-DVD. For the exception of like Robert Rodriguez's Machete, like everything else was direct-to-DVD. So that makes sense that those are going to be the most easily accessible on Tubi, Roku, Pluto, all of those. Into the Sun, I watched on Tubi. Eventually, I'm going to watch enough movies on Tubi that they're going to have to sponsor the show. That is the strategy here, because it does seem like I eventually come back around to that. But those first five, the iconic ones, the ones that are actually worth watching, those are like behind an extra level of a paywall, which I think is so interesting. And I don't know what that means, because again, just so you know, one of those, I can't remember which ones are which, because Steven Seagal's movies all have the same title, usually three words. One of them was a 20th Century Fox film. So I'm looking at you, Mickey Mouse. Why is it not on Disney Plus yet, you jerk? But the other four are all Warner Brothers movies. And last I checked, Warner Brothers does have a streaming service, and granted, the name of it changes every 9 months, but they do still have one, but it's not on HBO Max, Max, HBO Now, Max, HBO Max, Max, Max Squared, whatever it's called now. I'm sure at some point when people go back and listen to this episode, one of those was right for whatever the name is at this moment. One of those titles was correct. Anyway, so I found that all very interesting that it's, and I don't know if that's like people are trying to make it difficult to see the films that are the better ones, because they're like, Seagal's not a very good person, so let's just make the stuff that isn't very good more accessible, or whatever the case may be. I don't know. I just found that all very interesting, that the ones that are worth watching are the most difficult to get. But Into the Sun and Glimmer Man and Belly of the Beast and all these other, A Good Man, which he is not, are all just like, yeah, there's 1,000 of these movies on Tubi. You could pick any of them, which then raises the question, why in the world did I pick Into the Sun? Well, I did find out after the fact, as I was reading reviews of this movie, that Into the Sun is considered one of the better films of Seagal's in the direct-to-DVD era, which is saying something, seeing how this movie almost put me to sleep. And that's not even a joke. Like, I was literally dozing off during the final fight. But this is actually considered one of Seagal's better films of the direct-to-DVD era. But that had nothing to do with why I chose this movie, and had everything to do with the synopsis on Tubi. So this is, I took a picture of it, this is the actual synopsis of Into the Sun on Tubi. After the Tokyo governor is killed and his wife's sister kidnapped, After the Tokyo governor is killed and his wife's sister kidnapped, his ex-CIA American brother-in-law uncovers a plot to detonate a nuke in the U.S. That is so convoluted, I messed up and had to read it twice. If you're shaking your head like, wait, what did he just say? I'll read it again. After the Tokyo governor is killed and his wife's sister kidnapped, his ex-CIA American brother-in-law uncovers a plot to detonate a nuke in the U.S. And here's the thing. Yes, the Tokyo governor gets assassinated, and I'm pretty sure Seagal does play an ex-CIA operative. All the rest of this, I do not recall how this actually, if this actually happens in the movie. I don't remember anything about a nuclear weapon being potentially detonated in the United States. Unless that was during one of the parts when I was dozing off trying to watch this movie, I don't remember there being anything about a nuke or that Seagal is related to the guy who was assassinated. I think that's what that sentence was. But I read that and I was like, well, this sounds big, bombastic, and ridiculous, so let's give this a whirl. It had nothing to do with nukes, at least not that I remember. Instead, it had an equally, on paper, interesting, kind of like big, bombastic storyline of the Japanese Yakuza, which is the crime syndicate out there, the Japanese mafia, if you will, and the Chinese triad, the Tongs, join forces to take out the Tokyo governor and have this big plot to take over the streets of Tokyo, and Steven Seagal is brought in to stop it. That is the actual plot. I did read after the fact that this movie did have a much bigger budget and a much bigger, more bombastic story prior to it being revealed that this was going to be a direct-to-DVD film. So they scrapped a lot of it. Obviously, the budget got cut and went a different direction. So I don't know if maybe all of that nuke stuff is part of the other script and somehow that still got on the Tubi. Or again, maybe I just wasn't paying close enough attention and there was something about a nuke and that I just missed it. I guess that's also a possibility. But if there would be a word or a phrase to describe this film, I would say that this one, I bet when Steven Seagal was like doing interviews, if he did any, to talk about this movie or on DVD commentary or whatever, I'm sure the phrase passion project was brought up a lot, because as I was reading about the movie, it does kind of come off as that like passion project thing, especially because Steven Seagal's grubby little mitts are all over this project. The film originally had a different script. It got rewrote again because they found out it was going to be a direct-to-DVD film. Budget was cut, so they had to go smaller. So it was rewritten, and then Seagal is credited with co-writing it. But I think the co-writing part is all the stuff directly related to him. Not the character that he plays, but basically Into the Sun is Steven Seagal's love letter to Japan. Early on in his life, Seagal is a lifelong practitioner of Aikido, which is already a red flag. We talked about that. I talked about that during my review of the book, The Art of Peace, written by the founder of Aikido. But during his training process, he did live for an extended period of time in Japan. That's where he met his first wife. That marriage ended very poorly, but that's where he met his first wife and had had one kid, maybe two. They had a kid together. And so part of the movie, and this is actually all Steven Seagal toxicity aside, this was actually kind of a nice little part of it. There is a scene where Seagal and his young cop partner, because of course it's an action movie, so he's the seasoned veteran and he's got a young cop as a sidekick. They're at like a market. They're in a market and they stop in a little shop for a drink, and Seagal starts talking about how when he grew up in Japan, and his character, that is talking about how he grew up in Japan and would frequent this area a lot. And then there's this whole fight sequence, probably the best fight sequence of the whole movie, that takes place like right in the streets of this market. Well, apparently this was actually true of Steven Seagal's real life as well, that he would pass this market on his way to the dojo to train every day. And this area was like a common part of his life when he was living in Japan. There's also a scene where Some of the mobsters are in an apartment watching a movie, and Seagal busts in and starts fighting them with a samurai sword because, of course, he's an expert with the katana in this movie. Steven Seagal is an expert at everything, after all. But the movie they're watching is one of the, I think it's Gore, which is a kaiju. They're watching a kaiju film that Seagal's daughter is in, and the scene on screen has Steven Seagal's daughter in it. So I'm just thinking that all of these like real life nods and Easter eggs that are peppered into the movie are the parts that Steven Seagal wrote. You know, it's kind of like Mike Love with the Beach Boys. He gets like credit on all of these songs that he allegedly wrote them, when in reality he just wrote the one line that he says in the song. The film is also ironically funny, which I think is like a common thing within Steven Seagal. Is just, he is so dry. It's just, there's so much dry sarcasm that it's to the point where it's hard to tell if Seagal knows that he's funny or if he's just that dry in his delivery that it becomes funny. Because that's like a common trait, and that is a thing that some people say, that if Steven Seagal would have maybe tried to do more comedy, that he could have potentially salvaged his career a little bit, because that is, again, something that a lot of action stars try to do when their career starts to go down a little bit. They start doing comedies. They start doing family films, you know, Kindergarten Cop or Oscar, you know, these kinds of movies. Obviously, Jackie Chan, that is what he is known for, but try to do some kind of like rebound with comedy or family films just to try and keep things going a little bit. I mean, even Vin Diesel did The Pacifier, that movie that I'm pretty sure I'm the only one on the planet that likes it. Claire just chimed in that she loves it as well. But outside of Seagal's cameo in The Onion movie as the cock puncher, like, he hasn't really done any comedies, and he is just so darn dry. Like, he's got drier sarcasm than Bill Murray. And I think if he just could have leaned into that, maybe, and taking projects that actually would have done that, it could have worked. Again, he's trash. He's a piece of trash. So I don't necessarily want him to have a successful career now, but like, it could have been, but he didn't. Even though there's these moments in this movie where there is a street fight, and it's some of the mob members show up, and he tells the young cop guy, hold on, I got to go talk to these guys. And just the way that, or I'll be back in a minute. Just the way that he says it is like, oh, that was funny. I don't know if it was supposed to be, but it was funny because Steven Seagal practices a martial art that's all about peace and harmony and not injuring other people, and then he goes and snaps wrists and necks at lightning fast speed. That's just what he does, and that's what he does. He goes and he fights these guys, and he takes one of them and he's like banging his head into a vending machine, and every time he hits it, a soda spits out. That's funny. I don't know if it was supposed to be funny, but it's funny. Another point, you know, during the investigation, while Seagal's trying to figure out what's going on with all these different mob groups, he gets a call from the CIA guy who's in charge of the operation, who could have been Willem Dafoe, by the way. If this movie had a bigger budget, based off of the guy's look, it could have been Willem Dafoe. And it would have worked, because Willem Dafoe makes everything better. And the CIA operative guy is like, so how's it going? And Seagal goes, peachy keen. That's funny, because Steven Seagal is so bland and violent at the same time that to hear him say a phrase like peachy keen is funny. Like, this year, in the year of our Lord 2025, Liam Neeson, after doing all these violent action films, is doing the reboot of The Naked Gun. Like, if Liam Neeson can even say, yeah, I could do this, and do a ridiculous, goofy comedy film, then I don't see why Seagal didn't go that direction, other than the fact that Seagal is really full of himself. Like I said, he had his hands all over this project. He starred in it, co-wrote it. I think he was one of the producers. Best part of the whole dang movie is when you get to the credits, not because it's over, but I'm not kidding. Seagal was a blues musician as well. He put out a couple albums, and so the end credit song is a song by him, and I'm not even kidding. It's kind of a banger. Like, I actually enjoyed it. It was the best part of the movie, was this "Please Don't Cry" or something like that was the name of the song by Seagal. Like, it was actually kind of good. It had all these references to his life. Like, it just, and that's a trademark thing in Seagal, is that, like, you know, after his, during his, like, fall into obscurity, he started getting his hands more and more on his projects, and that is often also accredited to him as to why his career went down, because he got so full of himself and studios wouldn't say no to him that they let him direct and produce and write and edit films even, and it just didn't work. But I'm making sure I end this episode on the before we hit 30 minutes, because I am not doing this again. I'm sure I will. This is a good challenge for me to take, to have to sit down and watch a Steven Seagal movie. So would I buy it? No, I'm not going to. No. Would I watch it again? I would maybe just watch the fights again, because the fights are pretty good. Even the one I was dozing off during the end of the movie when he's whipping around a katana, like, it's good fight choreography, which is another thing he often gets his hands on in his movies. But that's how he started in Hollywood. He was, like, fight choreographer for things, for a few films. But, yeah, I'm not buying this. I don't really want to watch it again. Maybe I'll watch it again just to see if I completely missed the whole nuke thing, or if that is just an error on Tubi's part or whatever. But, yeah, Into the Sun, that's it. If this is supposed to be Steven Seagal's best during the direct-to-DVD era, I am really loathing watching any of the other direct-to-DVD films, because they are, this was just not that interesting. It's very dialogue heavy. Like, there's two katana fight scenes and this street fight I talked about, and that's really it. In an hour and 30 something minute movie, it's like those three fight scenes. There's an opening, like, military shooting scene as well, but it's just very dialogue heavy, and I just, it kind of made the movie drag a little. It did make the movie drag, and it's just like Seagal is so dry that, like, I can't tell if something's supposed to be funny or not in his low, very slow delivery during these long dialogue sections. Just kind of make the movie a little hard to get through. Peachy keen. Well, that's it for today's episode. A lot of military films this month. That wasn't necessarily intended, other than Phantom Raiders. But I think we're going to take a little bit of a break from the military-style films here coming up. But thank you for listening to today's episode, if you indeed made it through. Please rate and review this show wherever you get your podcasts. Pass this episode along to a friend and keep up with Kung Fu Pizza Party by following the show on Instagram at Kung Fu Pizza Party and on Letterboxd, Kung Fu Pizza PRTY, where you would have found out that I actually increased my star rating of Into the Sun because of that end credit song. Truly the best part of the whole movie, not just because it was hope. If you also want to keep up with my video content, you can follow my YouTube channel, Studio 219, A Place for Faith and Pop Culture, and check out the other great shows here on the Anazao Ministries Podcast Network, including Why I Don't Like, Systematic Ecology, and my sister's show, My Seminary Life, where I talk about all things faith, theology, philosophy, things like that. And thanks again for listening. This has been Kung Fu Pizza Party, where I have delivered high-flying action in 30 minutes or less, even though Steven Seagal didn't want to do that in this movie. I did. And served up some wisdom one slice at a time.